in a general sense, inquiry is the cultivation of wisdom. It's always going to be the most loving, truthful, efficient choice and response on behalf of love that is also natural. This isn't something you necessarily need to develop or learn. It's not a skill. Just undo what's in the way of you naturally entering the flow of life.
I didn't think that thought. That thought appeared. I'm observing that thought.
Mm-hmm. Every time that we step out of love and every time that we tell a story, any story that is not love, we are abandoning ourselves and the other person, and we are out of alignment, right? We are not choosing love.
And that's the power of, is this true? Mm-hmm. It immediately is a pattern interrupt that takes you out of the ego and thought patterns and brings conscious awareness to the present moment.
And that fundamentally is the profound power of inquiry, is it slices right through to the bottom, cuts through all of the bullshit. Is this true?
Everything you believe about yourself is not true. Everything that I'm believing to be true about me and my life is the source of my suffering, not life itself. That's good news. Fundamentally, life is good. There's a goodness built into it until I contradict that.
Welcome home to the Loving Consciously podcast.
My name is Amaris.
And my name is Eric.
And if you are like us, nobody taught you how to love.
We are best friends and life partners here to vulnerably and authentically share our 7-year journey to unconditional love.
Our mission is to help you learn how to love consciously in all of your relationships so we can journey together towards a more effective, intentional, and fulfilling way of giving and receiving love.
Loving consciously.
Together, we have overcome neurodivergence, mental health, addiction, pregnancy loss, infidelity, and grief. After 6 years, the lack of knowledge on how to heal or love each other through these challenges led to our separation.
After us both spiritually awakening and recommitting, we built our new conscious partnership founded on unconditional love and a commitment to personal growth.
Thank you for joining us as we put it all out there to show you the duality of our love's pain and beauty.
And remind you that you have both the capacity to love consciously and the power to always choose love. Namaste and welcome back to the Loving Consciously podcast. We are so excited to be here with you all today. We have a very special guest that is near and dear to our hearts and this relationship, and especially Eric. And so we're really excited to bring inquiry to you all. Before we get into that, I'd love to intro our guest here. Brandon Bozarth is here with us today, who I think is a master of inquiry, but is just a really amazing person and truly has really deeply impacted our relationship. And so, Brandon, thank you for being here today. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here.
Before we get into inquiry and a little bit about you, we ask all of our guests on the show, and so I would love to hear, what does loving consciously look like in your life, or what does that mean to you?
Yeah. So there's a couple things to break down. And first is love. Now, I think most people don't know what love is because it's never been modeled. So, you know, first it's like, if I have to attempt to conceive of what loving consciously is, I'm probably basing it off of what I've learned love is. And for most of us, we learned that from our parents growing up. And love from our parents, and not all of them, but in, you know, generationally speaking, is more akin to let's create strategies to hide from our own shadows together. And in that sense of safety and connection, we call that love. But a lot of it is let's subconsciously agree to not break through some of our deepest shadows and behaviors and kind of find strategies and workarounds. And as long as we can be compatible, you know, we can put food on the table, that's love. That's the kind of the highest ideal. And we look generationally, we have different versions of what that is. And so loving consciously, I'd say loving unconsciously is just reproducing kind of the template you were unknowingly given as a child that you assume to be the highest ideal of love. That would be loving unconsciously. So loving consciously would be first the process of deconstructing the false foundation of what love actually looks like, which often can be very unloving. All right, for example, people pleasing, something we all do, you know, and I'm not immune. is not a loving act. And we may see our parents, oh, well, you know, my daddy just doesn't want to upset her, you know, happy wife, happy life. So he's just going to say yes when it's a no, because it's nice. And that's love. And it's actually not nice. It creates repression. It creates distance. It creates disconnection. In fact, it creates the opposite of love. And so loving unconsciously is I'm assuming all of these strategies is what love looks like. As we enter a conscious relationship, our partner is going to reflect back to us all the places we feel not free, all the places that are hidden within us. And then we have a choice, cope the way I learned or confront and expose my unconscious way of loving, which is usually not loving at all, and then experience myself as brand new on the other side of it, which inquiry introduces us to a world that we're yet to be familiar with. It's like the apocalypse. It destroys your world. It's like, this is what love is. This is who I am. Da, da, da. Inquiry destroys that. And then you get to experience who would I be in its absence? And there's a spontaneous response that can't be codified. You can't say, this is what love looks like. This is what it doesn't look like, because it's spontaneous. It's intelligent. And it's like a puzzle piece. It adapts to fit any situation to be the most efficient and effective response in which the goal is to create more love, to expand itself. So I can't say, oh, this is what loving consciously looks like, doing this or being this way. It's a spontaneous arising when I'm not in the story of my conditioning. And the same is true for everyone else. There's a kind of self-organization that happens that we learn to, not necessarily, we don't learn to surrender to it. We just stop holding on to fighting against love, which is typically what our conditioning tells us to do.
Thank you for sharing that. I love so much your analytical mind. I love the wisdom of first deconstructing what it isn't. That's super important. No one's ever answered it like that. So thank you for that. And, you know, in our intro of this podcast, one of the things that we say is nobody taught us how to love, right? If you're like us, nobody taught you how to love. I certainly wasn't taught. I know you weren't taught. And so that really is what this conscious partnership and this loving consciously journey has been, is like getting rid of all of the things that don't serve us and figuring out, how do we love each other? How do we love ourselves? Like, what does that even look like?
Yeah, and it's really a beautiful process, as destructive as it may be, because you never know what's going to be on the other side. Through our work, and then also what you just shared here, is that love really is spontaneous. And that's why it's so fun to ask this question to every guest that we have on here, because everybody's definition and understanding of conscious love is different. It hasn't been fully modeled yet. And I think that we all have little puzzle pieces that we've gathered and learned throughout the way as we work on ourselves and do that work. And so as we bring those puzzle pieces together, we can start to understand kind of the broader concept of what conscious love in this world could look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Before we get into inquiry, I would love to ask about you. And I know this is kind of like a really interesting question to answer, but who are you? What do you do? How did you get here? You know, as much or as little as you want to share, we love vulnerability in this space. And, you know, really what brought you to inquiry?
I love that. Before we dive in, can I just say one more thing about love?
Yeah.
I'll just use this example. If I were to get up and dance, right, I can reference the past and go, this is what dancing is. This is how I danced before. And I'm kind of referencing my identity, right? And it might not be spontaneous. It might be rehearsed. And people feel that. It's like, oh, there's not a lot of soul in that. There's not a lot of emotion in that. And so, and I'm using dance specifically because it's outside the context of relationships. But if I were to dance from love and spontaneity, it would be as if I was dancing for the first time. It would be as if dance was being invented by me, because it'd be that new and fresh, because that's how spontaneous love is. It's like every single moment, there is going to be a different expression and version of me. Maybe it's similar because, you know, I have my signature, you have your signature, but there's going to be some aliveness to it. And so there's also qualities in love that, oh yeah, when we're really in love, things like boredom can't exist. Boredom and love are mutually exclusive. You know, that's fresh, it's new, it's spontaneous. It's kind of everything that people are looking for when they refer to like the honeymoon effect or the honeymoon stage is, well, you're in love because you haven't bumped up against each other's shadow yet. So part of you, oh man, this is so great. We get along and I give myself permission to totally be myself. And that's another way of saying being in love. And I don't mean like love is like a noun, like a thing that we're in. No, I'm in it. Or it'd be more accurate to say I am love, simply because I'm not trying to be anything else than what is true in the moment. But that's a state that we can access at any time. And I wouldn't even say it's a state that we can access. I would say it's our being. It's like the blue sky. We think we're the cloud. And just because we think we're the cloud, does that mean the blue sky disappears? Absolutely not. It's always there. So love isn't some transient thing. It's not a sensation. It's not an emotion. It doesn't come and go. Sensations come and go, right? I could be in love and feel a certain way. I could be in love and look at the world and then want to go do something about it and have a very different sensation. I could feel called into action to stop someone from attacking someone. And that's from love. I could feel gooey and butterflies, and that's from love. But we can't, the moment we reduce it to a sensation, we're trapping ourselves, because then we will chase that sensation. And that's a trap, right? Why? Because sensations are transient. They have to come and go. But what is not transient? What's not transient is truth, God, love, and they're really all the same thing. We're just looking at them from different angles. We go, oh, in relationship, it's love. In nature, it's beauty. And we use these different words to describe really the same fundamental core aspect of ourselves.
Thank you so much for adding that. As you were talking, I kept hearing like frequency and vibration in my mind, mm-hmm. of that frequency and that vibration is always existing, right? It's just, yeah. Are we aware of it? Are we in line with it? And so I love so much that you added that, because that's something we say a lot on this show is love is our natural state. It's always there. You can't get rid of it, right? You can't technically fall in or out of love. It's just, are you consciously on the awareness of that? I call it frequency, but of that existence, of that universal love that is all things, you know. And you're right, like source, God, creator, it is love. We are love. Everything is from love. And so it's kind of like this love revolution of trying to get people back to remembering that that is who we inherently are.
And I love too that you related it back to dance. Dance is a very strong passion of mine. It's one of my expressions of love and devotion to the creator. When I get into that flow and that creative energy, you never know what's going to happen next. And it's very similar in partnerships. You know, that creation energy from which we pull from to develop new experiences is all tied to our sexual energy. And I believe that love is the manifestation or that expression of this sexual energy, this creative energy in motion. When we are in partnership, just like you mentioned earlier, Brandon, is you never know what's going to happen next. And as we are confronted with challenges and beautiful experiences, we have the opportunity to create from love when we are in flow. And it's very clear when we're not in flow, because we will revert back to old patterns, or we will go through kind of these default mode mindsets. And it's the same thing with dance or any other creative modality. When you find yourself stuck or feeling like, oh, I need to recreate what I did in the past or go off of these past patterns, we rob ourselves from the opportunity to create something new.
Well said.
All right. So I'd love to hear about you and who you are and what you do and all of the fun things.
Yeah, I'll give you the short of the long of my story. Let's see, 2000, maybe 14 or 15, I was living in Philadelphia and I just walked away from a network marketing business, and I was traveling, speaking and building sales teams. And I was partying, you know, Friday, Saturday, sometimes Sunday. I had a sex addiction and just kind of an addictive personality, was coping a lot. really since a young age. However, I was exposed very early to this world. You could say like red pilled is kind of the meme. My freshman year of high school, my brother showed me the film Zeitgeist. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. It's like one of the OG conspiracy theory videos, and where some of it, you know, I don't necessarily agree. Most of it is 100% on in my, is what I believe. And it completely opened me up. I mean, as a freshman, I was like, oh, the school, the education system is owned by the Rockefellers. They're trying to produce factory workers. The banking system is creating perpetual never-ending debt. The war machine is just about expanding democracy and creating indebted countries. Like I had the, oh, whoa, life is not as it seems moment. My freshman year in high school, I actually created a club called the Brotherhood. I was like, you're going to create a secret society? I'm going to create a secret society that's going to, you know, overthrow yours. And, you know, as my freshman angry mind, when I saw this, and it really enraged me, because especially the 9/11 piece, seeing people jump out of buildings and die. And I go, this is orchestrated. Imagine if that was one of your parents and you knew your own government did it. It's like, you'd be enraged. All I could conceive of as a solution until I got deeper into like what we were talking about, understanding love, consciousness, nature of reality, God, Jesus, even for me. I was like, you know, we just need to get a rocket launcher and destroy the White House. Like, that's where my mind was at freshman year. Like, that's it. We just kill them. And,
Teenage angst.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a young age to be red pilled, by the way. Yeah. Like, I just want to save space for,
yeah,
I'm trying to imagine being a freshman and having that. I didn't know that was a part of your story.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I quickly was like, okay, everything kind of reoriented. I was like, all right, I'm going to do the bare minimum in school unless I want to learn, because what's the point? You know, I'm going to start teaching myself. And so that started at a young age. So even during this phase in Philadelphia where I was like partying and just women and kind of that whole classic male, you know, archetypal journey, I still had this underpinning interest and curiosity and research and spirituality. I was meditating every day. I had all my practices. It just wasn't embodied. It didn't travel. It's like the, you know, the longest journeys from the head to the heart. And so it just didn't make that descent yet. And I had this moment on the couch where I was just feeling depressed and kind of empty. And I said, you know, I'm going to live the opposite of how I've been living. This is not what I'm here for. And I just had this deep calling within me to just say yes to what I'm inspired to do for its own sake, without expecting any kind of money or income or any kind of result. And so I just followed that creative impulse. I started writing posts and putting out emails. And long story short, within a couple of weeks, I put out a newsletter that landed in the inbox of a woman moments before she was going to take her own life. And she was in Australia in a car, pulled up to a beach, and she had a handful of sleeping pills. She's sitting there, and she's a pretty renowned medium throughout Australia. And her guides came in and said, before you take those pills, you know, she was going to take them and then go in the ocean and sleep and drown. It was, before you take those pills, turn the radio on. And so she turns the radio on, and a song played, and it said word for word, you should stay a little bit longer. And so she paused, started crying, put the pills down, and then she got my email. And my email was titled, I'm excited to die. And of course, I wasn't referring to physical death. I was referring to ego death, because that's what I was going through at the time. It's like, I'm giving everything up and I'm just going to follow this impulse. You could take my car. You could take everything from me. I'm not selling my soul for money anymore. And that did happen, by the way. My car got repossessed. I got it back. It was a whole journey of letting go of everything. And she responded to that email and said, I want you to coach me. And I said, what's a coach? You know, what do you mean? I'm not a coach. She says, just get on a call and I'll help you. So I got on a call with her, and, you know, I had beginner's mind. I didn't have an expectation of how it should go. I didn't know too much about this world. Yeah, I knew about Tony Robbins and all this, but I never considered myself in that industry. And so I just shared from my heart, and it was exactly what she needed to hear. And she had this really profound breakthrough. And then I had a really profound breakthrough. Oh my God, this is what I meant to do. And we worked together for the next 6 months. She said, if we keep having these conversations, I'll essentially pay your bills. I said, okay. And we made that exchange. And one thing led to another. And I found a coach and a mentor, and he took me around the world and through different workshops and retreats. And I got to almost have like a apprenticeship under him for a couple of years. And I kind of took what I learned from him and all of my self-study. And, you know, he had all these certifications and he's been doing this. I mean, he's a renowned men's coach. And I took everything I learned and I created my own kind of modality, which I have my own definition of what a modality is. And then the rest is kind of history. You know, I had a lot of ups and downs since then. There's other stories I can go into, but that's what got me into this work.
I'm having a very strong moment of emotion over here because, number one, that was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That is the way that God Source Creator works, right? And I got full body chills when you were telling me that, but I'm getting emotional because I'm sitting here and processing through the last 2 years of our life and the profound impact that you've had on our relationship and this person right here that I love so dearly, who was at that place when you came into his sphere. And so I just have so much gratitude, and I can just see the beautifully intricate web that has been weaved together to get us here to this moment. And I'm just always brought to emotion when I think of the beauty of love and of life and all that is here. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you so much. I remember when you kind of shared this story with me when we first started working together, it helped me realize the power of vulnerability, like truly sharing our dark moments along with our light, to be able to bring that wisdom and knowledge that we carry with us out into the world is such a blessing and such a gift. And the society that we live in doesn't really create the container for that. It really encourages us to, like you said, come to these agreements of like, okay, if you don't talk about your shadows and all of your experiences that made you who you are today, I won't talk about mine, and we'll just live this surface level happy life. When in reality, when we dive deep and have that willingness and the courage to open our hearts and say, this is who I am, this is what I experienced, it opens the door for others to do the same. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we had a very similar experience, you and I, and why I resonated so deeply with you and working with you was that I was also experiencing a sexual addiction. We were partying on the weekends too, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and working two jobs, making all the money, doing the corporate America life, and, you know, living the quote unquote dream, but really suffering and decaying on the inside. And it wasn't until we suffered enough and stopped living in that way and deciding, okay, I'm going to do the opposite, just like you. I'm going to follow what feels right for me. And we've taken the better part of 2 years to just follow that creative energy. And it has landed us in a much more beautiful place than I could ever imagine. Our partnership is closer than it ever has been, even though we still have our challenges and our experiences, because the work is never done and we're constantly learning on deeper and deeper levels as we get more vulnerable. The love is comparably deeper as well. And so thank you for your contribution to that. And by following your highest expression and your passion, you have empowered us to do the same and to do the healing work that was necessary to get here. So thank you.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's my pleasure and honor to have worked with y'all.
So I would love to move into talking about inquiry. And real quick before we do that, I guess we should have prefaced this episode with, you were Eric's life coach. I don't know if that's like if that's the official term y'all use, but you were Eric's coach. Specifically, you worked with him around this topic, around inquiry and really that sexual addiction, dishonesty, self-denial piece. And so that's a perfect segue of moving into, what is inquiry? Like, if you had to describe it on a base level, maybe for someone who's new to it, neither one of us had ever heard of it, how would you introduce that to somebody?
Yeah. So, you know, I've been asked this question over the years and my answers have always kind of changed because it's such a deep topic and it kind of depends on my mood. But what I've kind of landed on recently is, in a general sense, inquiry is the cultivation of wisdom. And wisdom, my definition of wisdom is what spontaneously arises on behalf of love that is the path of least resistance, that's informing you, right? And how you navigate life, your choices, how you relate. It's always going to be the most loving, and we had a whole conversation on what that means, truthful, efficient choice and response on behalf of love that is also natural, meaning there is a self-fulfillment in moving in that direction. The same way that saying yes to what inspires you self-fulfills you. You don't need an outcome to feel good about doing something you love doing. It's like a little five-year-old kid. They want to go to Disneyland. You don't need to bribe them. They're just like, no, I want to go. I don't need any, I'm excited. And excitement is fulfilling. It's self-organizing. It produces energy. We could call it, it's an access point into flow state. And flow is just the absence of our constrained identity. And when we take those clothes off, oh man, I feel connected to everything. And so inquiry is kind of the means by which we dissolve the walls between you and that natural state, you and that natural flow. I think of life as there's a current designed for you, and it's always on. It's always inviting us into it. And that might look like moment by moment having an impulse that's not happening on behalf of ego. It's not happening for personal gain. It's not happening to avoid. It's not happening to get something in the future. It's happening of its own, for its own sake. It's inspiring for its own sake. Or, you know, and there's degrees of inspiration. I don't walk and get the impulse to clean my dishes and feel overly inspired by that, but I'll do it anyway, you know, because what it's creating overall, I'm inspired to create. But everything starts to get in line with an impulse of creativity and inspiration that is happening on behalf, we can call that God's will or life moving through you. It's not my will. It's not like I'm sitting there conceiving, man, Brandon, I'm just so excited about inquiry and German medicine, all these things. I didn't create that excitement. I discovered it. This is why, you know, Christians will say, oh, we're the chosen ones. We were chosen. It's because once they revealed a certain degree of truth via Christianity, they might go, oh my God, you know, truth is truth. I didn't make this up. I'm not deciding to resonate with this. I just am. It chose me. And so we have a moment by moment kind of expression in our business and our life and our relationship that happens on behalf of that truth. And when I say yes to it, people will look at me and go, oh, that's very wise. You know, it's always clear. There's clarity, there's stability. It's kind of all the things we're looking for. Inquiry goes, this isn't something you necessarily need to develop or learn. It's not a skill. Just undo the fear, the unconscious identity constraints that I'd assert we all come in with. We could say it's our karma. Undo what's in the way of you naturally entering the flow of life. You know, there's a book called The Surrender Experiment. It's one of the most perfect descriptions of how following that current is self-organizing, brings you the right people at the right time. You enter perfect timing. You're not concerned about time. It's more about timing. Your every resource comes when it needs to come. And that's actually a natural phenomenon, living from that place. That's how we're designed to live. How do I know we're designed to live that way? Because our entire biology supports it. We anti-age. Both the hemispheres of our brains sync up. We have an extraordinary memory recall. People feel happy and connected to life. They care about nature. So there's a returning to a natural state, which again, I would assert it's not really a state. It's just our being. It's a returning to the naturalness of our being by undoing what's unnatural, but considered normal in this society. And that does require courage, vulnerability, honest self-honesty. So yeah.
That is a very, very exquisite definition of inquiry. Thank you for that. I love that you attributed it to wisdom. And the Surrender Experiment, we shout that book out on this podcast all the time because you're right. It is the perfect example of living in flow and working with the universe. Can you go a little bit into what inquiry looks like, or maybe how you work with your clients. I know I obviously know the answer to this, but for those people who are new, like, I know a lot about, you talk a lot about Byron Katie's work, and that's where a lot of this, I don't know if I would call it skill, but the power of inquiry kind of came from.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what I love about how Byron Katie discovered inquiry is it actually didn't come to her in a series of questions. It came to her in one moment of realization. Previous to thought, I'm at peace. That was it. She's laying on the floor. She's at a halfway house. She checked herself in because she felt she was agoraphobic, and she felt she was such a burden to her family. She's like, I'm going to go live at a halfway house. She slept on the floor voluntarily because she felt she didn't deserve a bed. I mean, this is the level of constraint. She couldn't leave the house. That's what agoraphobia is. So she's sleeping on the bed. The story is this cockroach kind of walks either over her foot or near her, and she wakes up. And just for a moment, there's just nothing there but what is. Woman laying on floor. And then the thought came in. Thought of past, thought of future, thought of who I am, what's true about me, what's true about life, and thus all the suffering. And she just saw that gap just in a moment, and went and looked, and everything undid itself in that moment. It was like, wow, it's all thought. It's all my mind, right? Everything that I'm believing to be true about me and my life is the source of my suffering, not life itself. That's good news. That's the, in the Bible, that's God is good means this is good. It's good. Fundamentally, life is good. There's a goodness built into it until I contradict that. So I am so loved, I'm allowed to contradict it. That's another way to interpret love. You get the free will to believe it's not good. I'm going to even, you're even going to be supported in that, but it doesn't change the fact. So she saw that. And everything started undoing itself. And then she had this 2-year period of integrating, where it was like every day sitting in inquiry, all of her conditioning, fighting to survive. I'm not loved. My mom doesn't love me, da da da. And she would sit, and those questions that kind of unfolded, is it true? Who am I when I believe it? What does life look like? Who would I be in the absence? And the turnarounds were kind of a framework of her just returning to the truth over and over again, and kind of purging out the conditioning that were part of her lineage for generations. And so I've taken the basic understanding, and this is what I teach in my courses, the basic understanding of inquiry. A lot of people can memorize questions, but that doesn't mean you've actually cultivated the wisdom as an individual. You have to apply it. I found this in 2019, and for the first year, almost every day sat down in inquiry, writing the questions, sitting in it. And I wouldn't get up until I felt free from whatever was going on inside of me. And so I've taken that understanding of what the Byron Katie's work is based on, and then have added in a lot of nuances that I've discovered just over my experience, reasons why we might want to hold on to our identity. We might want to hold on to our limitations, which is because we think we're going to get something out of it, right? What is actually the cause of what motivates all of our actions and behavior? And then through the rest of my training, I've just kind of taken the framework and created it anew in how it makes sense to me. And so there's different questions, different processes. And one thing that I'll say is what makes inquiry effective is that it's coming from the person that it's coming from. It's happening on behalf of truth and their passion, just like anything else. So if someone is taking someone through their version of inquiry, if they're in their passion, if they're doing it for its own sake, they're going to take that person through a unique process that's never happened. No one else can replicate, because their passion is unique to them. They're a unique puzzle piece. And that puzzle piece will unlock other people's puzzle pieces that only they can unlock. And so it's not, this is why I don't say the form of inquiry I teach isn't a modality, because I don't sit there and teach people questions. I teach people how to apply the questions that are pointing to an understanding. And the understanding in basic terms is everything you believe about yourself is not true. Everything. And that's like a big statement.
It's a huge statement. And I think you just nailed that concrete foundation of what inquiry has been in our journey together, which is that fundamental question of, is this true?
Mm-hmm.
Is this true? Because it's the ultimate pattern interrupt.
Yeah.
And with every session that we've had together, it's been a different experience. It's interesting to see how the mind's thoughts manifest in completely different ways. But with the power of inquiry, you can begin to understand that they all typically point to one or maybe two core fundamental wounds.
Yep.
And each time that we've worked together, I'm like, oh no, this is totally a different thing. This is totally, you know, something else that is expressing. I learned, oh yeah, it was self-worth the last time. Great. What's this next thing? And through inquiry and sitting down, okay, is this thought true? First of all, okay, no, I didn't think that thought. That thought appeared. I'm observing that thought. Okay, so then through your coaching, and every time it's different, right? We're able to get to a place of understanding that, no, this is still that same wound, just manifesting in a different way or showing up in a different experience. And so every time that I'm able to sit in inquiry, I'm able to heal and reclaim a different part of myself. And that has happened in our partnership too. Inquiry has really helped me understand how similar patterns in our partnership and core wounds of our partnership have manifested in different ways, in different aspects of our life. And by sitting down and really taking the time to interrupt the normal automatic thought patterns and get to the truth of what's really going on has opened up and unlocked the key to actual healing versus band-aid solutions of like, okay, this is the problem, let's solve this problem, versus let's go to the source of the wound and let's work on that deeper healing.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because now that this skill set is present, when I don't want to use moments of conflict, but maybe moments of tension or something is being triggered in one of us comes up, Eric has this, it's his inquiry face. And you think I'd recognize it by now, but every time my exact words every time is, what is wrong with you? Or what's going on right now? Or what, something to that effect. And he just gets this like look on his face. And then the response is always, hold on, I'm sitting in inquiry. And you can just see the very like, it's just fascinating, the energetic experience of like, okay, my mind is telling me this thing, and now I'm bringing conscious awareness to it and separating from that, right? Because like you said in the beginning, everything that we tell ourselves is a lie, right? Like the mind is not truth. Truth is love, right? Truth is consciousness. Truth is God, whatever you want to call that. And so it's just been so interesting to see this radical shift in my partner who so deeply believed these, not only just believed them, but wasn't even aware that they were thoughts, right? Like the identification with them. And the other thing I was thinking about is how vastly different our journeys have been. We've gone in very different directions, and me a little bit more quickly in some ways, and him in others. And for me with inquiry, and I really kind of only have this one moment or one example, and it's thanks to you. We did one couple session with you. And I've shared this on the show before, but I'm going to share it again because it's deeply profound. And I want to preface this with saying, you know, this is like high level work here, right? Like it is, let alone to come to grips with you are not your mind. Like most people, what we can say 99% of humanity, give or take, can't even conceive that. And so I want to save space if you're listening to this, that this is really high level work. This took me years to get to this place, but we were in a couple session, and as Eric was saying, it all comes back to kind of these core wounds. Nothing's really about him, right? It's all about my parents. Let's just be honest. And so you were working through something with me. And for me, it was like, is it true? Well, of course it's not true, Brandon. You know, like that's a silly question. I was a little bit farther along in that. It was when we got to the turnarounds, and there was a moment we were specifically looking at a scene when I was, I don't know, somewhere between 10 and 12. And I had a parent who was going through some very serious mental health issues and was having a suicidal episode and was essentially, you know, saying like they didn't want to live and everything in their life sucked, and to their child, right? And so I'm perceiving and creating this narrative that that includes me and that my parent was abandoning me. And something that you said in the turnaround was you said, now let's turn that around to I abandoned myself. Did your parent actually abandon you, or did you create this story based on what you perceived to be the trauma at that time? Mm-hmm. And what was really interesting that you said was, this was a very deep and dark time for my parent, and they needed love more than ever, right? And I, my ego, my mind, my personal self chose to create this narrative that I was being abandoned, right? Because that made me feel safe, and that stuck to that conditioning of the mind. And when you said those words, that was probably one of the biggest shifts in consciousness in my journey, because it just was the moment of like, oh my gosh, like it all is just a story. Like I was so far past, oh, I know these are all stories, right? But that like deep ingrained, every time that we step out of love and every time that we tell a story, any story that is not love, we are abandoning ourselves and the other person, and we are out of alignment, right? We are not choosing love, which is the other tagline of this podcast, always choose love. And so I share this to show people the power that inquiry has, because sometimes it is just so unconscious to us. We can't see it, right? And just asking a simple question of, is this true? Do I know that it's true? And if those questions aren't working, I found for me personally, maybe my super ego was a little sneaky. It was that turnaround of looking at it from the other lens. And I just, again, thank you for that, because still to this day, inquiry is normal for me now. Like I'm so consciously aware of my ego and my mind and my stories that I kind of skip those first set of questions and immediately go to like, where is this coming from? And why is this thought being presented in my field right now? Like what is asking to be looked at and loved and released? But it's been profoundly impactful for me as well. And I thank you so much for bringing that into my sphere, because, you know, now every time I'm upset at him or every time he triggers me, it's like, I'm doing this to myself, right? Like he's not doing anything. I can't be angry at him. And so it's helped a lot with my anger, which I know is something you've shared a lot about in, you know, your content and just your story. Mm-hmm. That's my journey. My journey has been with anger, and it's really helped me get into that insidious rage, right? That like feminine rage of what am I really angry at right now? Mm-hmm. And without inquiry in those moments of anger, we'd be in a very different situation right now.
Yeah. Well, you guys are doing great work. And I want to take the profundity to another level with what you just shared. And this is what I love about inquiry is we get to an identity, and an identity is different than a way of perceiving. It is a way of perceiving, but it's a fundamental way of perceiving ourselves and life that typically we've had our entire life. And like you said, Eric, most people, there's maybe three or four, sometimes even less, kind of core narratives about who we are. So the question, who am I? What is God? What is this reality? What is life? Everyone has an answer to those questions. Most people just don't know what their answers are because they've unconsciously agreed and accepted mainstream narratives, ideas about what these are. And that will form your identity, right? Your answer to those questions. And that's coming from your parents, your conditioning, all of that. So identity statements sound like I am wrong, I am bad, I am alone, I am not enough, I'm not loved, I'm not supported, I'm not safe. These are fundamental identities. So the example of being abandoned, it might be this underlying identity there that says, I'm not loved, or I'm not important, or I'm not wanted, or I'm not safe, something underneath that. And when we see that it was that identity, that context that came online in that moment that caused us the pain, the fear, the anger, not what was happening in the reality. If we look in the reality, it might have been parents arguing. And if we take another story off, parents saying, making sounds, we're taking all the stories off. That's what happened. Or it might be parents walking away, or mom or dad goes in car and drives to store. My narrative is you left me. It's like you hear these words before. I lost all my money. No one has lost. Maybe some people. No one loses their money. They spent it. But the narrative, I lost it. No. You spent it on this, 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 and that. Oh, this person left me. No, they walked out the door. And they got in their car and they drove away. You know, oh, this person doesn't love me. No, they were silent and they walked into the other room and closed the door. They abandoned me. No, they walked, right? So we're starting to see, wait, is it reality that hurt? Or is it my thinking and believing, my story about reality that's informed by this fundamental context? I'm not safe. I'm not loved. I'm not whatever. Or I am bad. I am, you know, the opposite. And so if we can go back to that moment and see it without, because the context, that core belief is like blue tinted glasses. We have to see it that way, which, by the way, is how we create the past in the now. We're wearing those glasses now, and then we're going to access a certain version of the past that is a mirror image of what we're experiencing now. Past and future, think of it like a sphere, not a line. You have all these little points on the sphere, and they're constantly changing. What you think your future is going to be like and how you perceive your past is constantly changing based on who you're being right now. It's way more fluid than we think. When you shift now, you'll access a different version of the past and you'll feel like a different version of the future is more probable. That's the shift of going from being anxious about the future to excited about the future, which always happens when there's also a shift in how we perceive the past. It's all one happening. So if I go back to a moment where I felt abandoned and I question the narrative, I was abandoned, is it true? Who would I be in the same situation in the absence of that story? One level deeper, I'm not loved. In that situation, is it true? What would be different? Who would I be in the absence of that story in the same scene? And you see a new possibility. You see you, authentic you, emerge in a situation that you couldn't previously see. And that's informing you on how to live now. And that's what that little kid signed up to teach you. And that's how your parents are actually parenting you on a higher level. They're helping you develop into your most authentic, loving self by not giving you what you thought you needed from them, which you actually have signed up to give to yourself in this life, which is what you're meant to give to them. You are actually meant to be the source of it for them and for your next of kin and for everyone that you touch. When you're the source of something, you don't seek it. And so when you take on that curriculum fully, you also realize, man, I've had perfect parents. They've given me exactly what I needed, which was to not get what I needed. Because I need to question if I actually needed that from them. And in the absence of that, I realize I already have it deeper than that. I already am it. In the absence of that context, I am safe. I was never abandoned. My dad got in the car and drove away. My mom got in the car and drove away. That's what happened. I wasn't abandoned. And that's when the identity shifts. Oh my God, who would I be if I was never abandoned? If no one has ever abandoned me? That's a whole different life. That's you being one day old and being introduced to a world that you didn't know existed.
That is very profound. And thank you for sharing that. Inquiry has so much depth to it, and it requalifies everything that we know and experience today in our life, because we begin to see our emotions as messengers, for one.
Yeah.
Right? We experience this negative emotion, quote unquote, whatever it may be, sadness, fear, anger. And then we can ask, okay, what's coming up? Why am I feeling this right now? And is that true? Okay, if that's not true, then what is more true? And then if I can follow that line and figure out who I would be without that narrative that the emotion is using to manifest, you shift from identifying with the emotion to being grateful for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it points you in the direction that you, it points you in a direction and tells you this is where you have opportunities for growth and healing. This is manifested in our partnership quite a bit. as recent as this morning of not feeling quote unquote safe. And for me, and then in turn, externalizing that onto everything other than me, looking for safety in others. And that's where the inherent pattern of dishonesty showed up in our partnership. When I didn't feel safe to share because I felt like I would be left, or I would hurt her, or I would cause more pain, I would hold it and I would bottle that within myself. And then that would in turn cause resentment because then the narrative would show up of, I'm not safe with this person. When in reality, it was me believing that I wasn't safe and not having the courage to step out and say, hey, I'm experiencing this thing. Hey, I relapsed. Hey, I did this thing that I'm not proud of. I was less than perfect. And then that unlocked the narrative of, oh, I'm holding myself to an impossible standard. And then when I fail at that standard, I blame my partner, because it's this externalization of who is putting on this standard. Is it really my partner, or is it me? Am I needing to be perfect to feel safe? Or can I just accept myself and love myself for who I am, and then come and be vulnerable with my partner and allow them into my space? We recently went through a period of 3 months that we talked about on our last episode, where I was living in the shadow of dishonesty and I was holding back that I had relapsed. And the moment I sat in inquiry and had suffered enough and caused enough suffering in this partnership to realize something's wrong here, and I was able to create that own sense of safety within myself and have that courage to come and share, it was an almost immediate return to love and vulnerability, because the energetics shifted, and who I was without the story was something completely different. I was able to access that flow and that love and that creative energy that we were talking about earlier, of just following what was right in the moment, which looks different for everybody in everybody's situation. But the power of inquiry allows you to deeply understand yourself, the narratives that are coming up that you may be identifying with, and then gives you the power to take ownership and control of your life. You move out of victimization and into freedom, because you now have the ability to make different choices. You're the one that's in the driver's seat, and that's the power of, is this true? It immediately is a pattern interrupt that takes you out of the ego and thought patterns and brings conscious awareness to the present moment, because you are actively asking, what am I experiencing right now? And is this in alignment? Because if it's not, now I have the ability to bring it back into alignment.
Yeah, really well said. And I'll just say briefly that one thing you're speaking of is a context I like to call the three levels of truth telling. And it's this process of getting radically honest with ourselves. This is the freedom in AA, for example, when someone finally goes, you know what, I'm an alcoholic, you know, but this is stage one, because you don't want to stay there. You don't want to become identified. But there's a power in admission, right? We admit in order to be admitted back into love. And then that second stage is, I tell the truth to me, I tell the truth to others, typically my partners and my close people. And then third is, I tell the truth to the world, which y'all are doing on this podcast. So it's I believe it's an evolution. This way of living is an evolutionary impulse. It's like, because the more that we live this way, the more free we feel, the more in love we feel, therefore the more flow we can access, therefore the more efficient, effective, and we're starting to fulfill kind of our own destiny of becoming our natural selves, which I think is what this next phase of evolution looks like.
I love all this. Thank you both so much. The last thing I want to touch on this is a pattern in our relationship that inquiry has really helped us overcome. And then I would love for our last question here to talk a little bit about the title of this episode, Inquiring with Love. But for us, I think one of the core narratives and stories that we were both, and you helped us see that real quick, were telling ourselves was, he doesn't love me. She doesn't love me, right? He lied, he cheated, he did this, he, all the stories, right? He did all of these things, and so he doesn't love me. And on his part, she doesn't listen, she's angry, right? She yells, whatever was happening, so she doesn't love me. And we did that in that couple session as well, was really digging into this narrative of like, you don't love me. And of course, it's just projection, right? It all came back to ourselves. I'd love to hear from your perspective how you did a lot more work around this than I did with inquiry, like how you worked through that narrative and that story of me not loving you.
Yeah, it was some deep work that happened over the course of about a year of just sitting with and understanding that it was never you that didn't love me. It was me withholding love from myself. It was my own self-worth. And we talk about this a lot on this podcast about love starts, all love is self-love. It all starts with us. And we cannot give something that we are not first giving to ourselves, because you're essentially trying to play a game without the rules. And the minute I realized, everything pointed back to my own perceptions of who I was showing up as in this world. It gave me a very clear roadmap to say, okay, if it's not my partner, what changes can I make in my life today to reinforce how I feel about myself? Let's start being honest. Let's start doing the work. Let's start holding myself accountable. Let's start making an effort to live from a place of authenticity, vulnerability, and dedication to growth. And the more I followed those breadcrumbs, I felt more like myself. I felt more empowered. And it allowed me to show up in my partnership in a very different way, because I was no longer telling myself the stories that she was angry at me, that she was resenting me, that she hated me. I was just observing the pattern of, my partner is upset. My partner is experiencing an emotion. She's reacting to something in the field.
And I was identifying with my narratives and my stories, and that was manifesting as anger. It's fascinating to me, and I'm sure you see this all the time when you work with couples, like how the narratives play with each other, right? And I see now.
You mirror.
Yeah, and I see now in friends and family and just the public, we'll be out in public and we'll see people arguing, and we're just fascinated, and we're like, well, sending love is what we do. But we see now that interaction of how each story plays on the other person's story, and you get so, you know, just deep in the narratives that there's just no truth anymore, right? It's just a big jumbled mess of narratives and ego. There's no more love. And that fundamentally is the profound power of inquiry, is it slices right through to the bottom, cuts through all of the bullshit. Is this true? Do I know that this is true? Mm-hmm. Who would I be right now if I wasn't telling myself this narrative and this story that he doesn't love me, or, you know, our relationship is ruined, or I can't trust him? And then also that flip around. And it's fascinating to me to see how the mind works, and how something so simple as asking a couple of questions, right? I mean, it's not that simple, but it is that simple, you know, just asking yourself those questions. So moving into this last piece here, I'm curious if you have any thoughts or any advice as listeners either start or continue to cultivate inquiry in their lives, how they can do it in a healthy and loving way, right? We want to do this in a healthy way. We definitely had a small phase where our egos kind of hijacked inquiry and would throw it in each other's faces. And so I would love if you could share. Yeah, absolutely. If you could share a little bit about how they can incorporate this in a healthy and loving way.
Yeah. We don't want to become the annoying inquiry people. Is it true? Is it true? It's not always appropriate. This is why, again, I teach the understanding and the living of it, in which love is spontaneously informing your response, not some robotic, you know, memorization. And I do want to say as well, in partnership, it's important to know often, not always, but often, what we want from the other person is actually what we're withholding from them. Really, that's really profound when you get it. What I want from you is typically what I'm currently withholding from you. I want love from you. I want attention. I want affirmation. Now, I'm most likely withholding that from you. Or I'm doing all those things, but it's fake and it's manipulation to try to get it back. But if I'm withholding it from you, it already implies I'm withholding it from me. I like to say I withhold it from you, though, because it gives more of a magnifying glass. It's like, man, I want you to just see me. And I'm not seeing them. I'm so self-focused. No wonder I'm in pain. I'm self-focused. I'm focused on this small self. There's always pain there. So I want to make that clear. That's just a good little marker to test if you're listening to this and you're in a partnership. Man, I want this from and I want this to change. It's like, turn it around and see where you might be withholding those things from your partner, which implies something about you, some relationship with you.
It's really interesting you say this. We just had a massive breakthrough around this and the breakthroughs continue, but it's this concept of externalizing, right? Like projecting our needs, our wants, and all of these things onto whoever it is. Conscious relating is not just romantic. And basically expecting, like, I want physical affection. And so that's your responsibility, right? And that I think is something, it is a very common in almost all the relationships that are unconscious that I witness. A very common pattern is I need or want blank. And as such, it is your responsibility to give it to me. And then when you don't, I'm resentful. And then I blame you. And it's just this cycle. And it's really coming to that self-ownership and that self-accountability of, I want affection. And so I'm going to go ask for affection, or I'm going to go give you affection because that's what I'm seeking. And that profound shift, if there's one thing listeners take home from this episode, I hope it would be this moment of, if you are wanting or needing something, that is your responsibility to honor and find a way to communicate and or be met, not expecting the other person to do it.
Yeah. And there's a really profound transition that happens when you start to live that. You go from need to preference. Need says, I have no choice. I need this from you, or I have no choice but to feel upset. So there's a negative implication on if the need isn't met and you don't feel like there's choice around it. Preference says, I do have a choice. This is real. This is true. This is what I want. I'm going to express it. And if you don't give it to me, I have a choice. I could still feel okay. I know I'm still loved. I know. So it's a journey from need to preference. You know, you get this reinforced a lot in the coaching world, which is a little cringe, honestly. It's like, just meet all your partner's needs and learn their love languages and da-da-da. And it could be such a trap. It's like, hey, here's my agreements. There's yours. Let's exchange to make each other feel good. And there's a nuanced conversation where some of that, if it's true, that's fine. It's sweet. It's like, I want to consider this person, and out of my overflowing love, yeah, I can do these things if it's authentic, if it's true. But if I'm doing it because it's transactionally expected, it's in order for me to get something in return, it's not love, it's manipulation. So where the journey is, okay, here are all my needs. Here's what I think I need. And what I actually need is to question if I really need them. And I mean need specifically. I don't mean deny what you want. I don't mean deny what's true. I don't mean just chameleon yourself. You question, if I don't get this met, what does it mean about me? And if I can drop that story, then it moves to a preference, and you should honor your preferences. You know, I'm in a relationship where certain ways of being interacted with, it's not my preference. I go, you know, no, I'm going to take space, or no to this, or yes to that. And my no and yes is really clear, and it creates a kind of boundary, but I'm not boundaried. You know, I'm not bound, but there's still kind of boundaries that are, but they're informed not from I need this, but this is just what's true for me. This is what feels true for me. And it's not even a feeling. It just happens. It's like, oh, I move away from that. I move towards this. Same way you'd be walking down the street and someone's in the dark alley and they're like, hey, if you come down here, I'm going to kill you. You go, okay, I'm probably not going to move down there. You can, it's not that you have a limiting belief. It's just, it's not what, where love is taking you. It's not where truth is taking you. So we get more sensitive to our little truth meter. And that will, it's not like you just become a doormat. You're just a yes to everything. You actually get more specific with what you're yes to and what you're a no to. And you're just doing it within the context of I have choice. You don't need to change in order for me to know what my yeses and nos are and what my preferences are. Right.
Thank you for that clarification. This has been, over these last few months especially, we've been deeply conscious of our language. It's interesting. I slipped on that there of changing from I need to like I want in this partnership, because even up to as recent as a few months ago, there was still that projection of like, I need you to give me more physical affection. Mm-hmm. I need you to be honest, whatever it may be between the two of us. And so even as recent as I think a week ago, we were having a huge breakthrough around the disclosure and what he shared about earlier, which we talked about on our last episode. And there was a moment where he said like, I need you to give me more physical affection, mm-hmm. and then revisited that through inquiry and was like, well, wait a minute. You know, and so I love that, because something we talk about a lot on this podcast is language. Language matters. The mm-hmm. words that we are speaking is what's creating the story in our mind. It's also what's creating our reality, but that's a whole other topic, right? And so being really mindful of our language and how we are communicating our, I love preferences. I like that word even more than want. Like, I want something. I prefer, right? So thank you for that.
Yeah, and the thing about moving from need to preference is that it is a very selfless act. Mm-hmm. And the minute we move from need to preference in any relationship, romantic or familial or friendship or coworker, whatever it may be, we immediately take that burden off of them. Mm-hmm. We had a moment during this last disclosure where I expressed, I feel like I need to always hold the space. I always mm-hmm. feel like I always need to be this perfect version of myself, because if not, then, you know, you will suffer, essentially. And one of the most profound and selfless things that my partner, my lovely partner here, said was, I don't need you to hold the space. I can hold space for myself. And immediately, tears started flowing. Mm-hmm. All that energy, all that yeah. weight that I had put yeah. on myself was free. And so by doing that work, I'm so grateful that you did that, allows that person that we are in relationship to truly experience freedom in a partnership and be their authentic self. It takes that burden of pressure off and really creates a container of love and authenticity where neither one is coming in this transactional manner. That is what I believe is the foundation of a conscious partnership, is we are not here to transact with one another. We are here to show up in our authentic expressions, whether it's, okay, my cup is overflowing and I have a lot to give, or I'm going through a lot right now and I don't have the capacity right now. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. both are valid. And when we love unconditionally and accept one another, regardless of what state we're in, we create this container of just love, of unconditional love.
Yeah. Okay. So tying it all home here, back to our original question, we got very sidetracked there, but I'm glad we did. I think that was really powerful stuff for listeners to start inquiring about. So how can we incorporate more of this? And again, in a healthy and loving way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it just starts at the energetic level of knowing the truth about someone more than they believe in their lie. In A Course in Miracles, they call that having charity of the spirit. It means I'm going to assume that eventually you're going to know the truth and that you're further along than you will actually think you are. And I'm going to see you and not need to fix you or change you or control you or coach you. You know, for me and in my relationship, it's all about permission. Do you want support right now or do you want me to listen? It's simple. Just listen. Okay, I'm available for that. Oh, you want support? Okay, I can do that. But if I know, if I just see what's true and I'm dedicated to knowing what's actually true about them, which is synonymous with love, then I'm just in the field of truth and love. That's all you need to do. And I'm responding from that place. At times that could look a little fierce. It could be like, I'll try to give an example from my relationship. Very simple one, not really that fierce, but it makes a good point. My partner, Natalie, she reached out one day. She said, hey, like, come over, come see me. I want to see you. And it just wasn't true. It's not because I didn't want to see her. It's not because I felt disconnected. It's because I wanted to do what I was doing. And so it was just like, no, I'm going to do what I'm doing. And it's like, I'm really sad. Okay, that's okay. I love you. That was it. That was my response. And it was true. It was true because I wanted to do what I was doing. I was in flow with what I was doing. And if someone is sad or upset or whatever it might be, if I take myself out of what's true for me, I'm actually, in order to, you know, pull someone through something, that's actually an unloving act. So that's a perfect example of, oh, I know what's true for her. I know underneath that, like, I know she's believing some stories that aren't true. I also know I can't change or fix that. I also know it's not up to me. What I can do is love her. And this is what it looks like right now. Notice how I'm not sitting there going, is it true? Do inquiry. I'm not doing any of that. So again, it's not your job to fix someone. The moment you think someone else needs to do the work, guess what? You need to do the work. It's not up. You can't actually make someone feel good. And the moment you think you can, you actually make them into a victim and you into a savior. So it just becomes a lot more simple. Someone might say, oh, you know what? I really am afraid and sad and this and that. And you might just look and go, okay, yeah, I'm with you. It might just be that. I'm not trying to fix or change. I'm just loving you. Oh, you're upset? Okay, yeah. Let's be with that now. So a lot of my responses in partnership now just become very simple. And I leave it to them. It's like, they want help, ask us. They can ask a specific question. If they need to learn those skills the same way that I need to learn those skills. I'm not going to take on any role beyond what truth in the moment is informing me to say. And sometimes it is like, this is what's coming through. Can I share? And sometimes it's just a simple acknowledgement of what they're experiencing. Like, I can't give anyone a code. This is what it looks like. Just say what it doesn't look like is trying to change, fix, be right, be the one that is in truth and needing them to get into truth. All of that isn't using inquiry properly. In fact, you've left inquiry if you're playing that out.
I love how simple you kept it. And as you were talking, something came through for me that I'm just processing now in this moment that we've incorporated in this partnership is when one of us starts spiraling into the stories, right? And essentially what you were saying is don't feed the story, don't feed the narrative, right? If you're just there with it, okay, I love you, or encouraging them to inquire, you're not inserting yourself in that story. You're not giving the ego fuel is what we say. But something that we have, I think unconsciously until now, used is the phrase, did I say that? So when one of us is spiraling into a story of like, you don't love me or you're mad at me or whatever it is, I let you down. We both will just very bluntly. And I love that you said fierce because sometimes it is fierce. It is really fierce being factual, right? That knife, like I said, cutting right through the bullshit, emotion stories aside, like, let's get back into truth. Did I say that? And so, you know, sometimes he'll be spiraling and he'll be like, I feel like you're mad at me and I'm a terrible partner and you don't love me. And blah, blah, and if I'm honest, you're going to leave me. And it's just like, did I say that? And it's that tone of, did I say that? And you just see this like stark moment in both of our faces of, no, you didn't say that. That's something I'm telling myself in my mind. That's the story and the narrative. And then that's the prompt. Really what I'm saying here is we use that as a prompt for each other to go into inquiry of like, I'm not going to participate in this narrative. I didn't say that thing. And so encouraging the other person to take that ownership back, do their inner work, and then you remain detached from that story.
I want to give this nuance, and it might be different because it's a gender thing, but I know this. If Natalie had those fears come up and I looked at her, I said, did I say that? I would drive probably a knife into her heart. If I'm being honest, that's what it would feel like for me. Now, I know it's not true. I know it's not true. But I also speak woman pretty well. And I know she just wants to feel heard and understood. And so in that moment, I might sit there and go, tell me about that. What? Tell me about the fear. It's not encouraging the fear. It's not like, oh man, yeah, you should be afraid. It's like, bring it into the light. Bring more. Bring it into the light. Oh, you're afraid. What are you afraid of? And I might just ask that question. Let it all come out. And go, man. Where my mind is, man, if I was believing that, I'd feel the same way. But I'm not saying that out loud. I don't need to say that. So I'm just going, man, I totally get that. I would feel the same way with all those thoughts. I would feel the same way. I'm not offering anything. I'm trying to find myself in it. And I might even think at one moment, man, when have I felt that? And I might just access it a little bit. Go, oh yeah. Ooh, yeah, that is scary. That is that whole world that you're in, like, it is intense. Can I hold you? Or I might just acknowledge it. It's like, yeah, that is intense. That's intense. That's a lot. You're feeling a lot right now. And I'm just going to be right here. I'm just going to be here. And 9 times out of 10, there's that emotional where we have to really embrace it before we go into inquiry. This is why I teach a practice called immediacy. Oh, emotion comes up before I inquire. Let me really get in touch with what immediately is here in my sensational body. Oh, can I feel this to its completion? Can I be with this until I don't need it to leave me ever? That's the test. If we can look at emotion and say this never needs to go, we've actually made space for it. Then we can inquire. So I know that that stage is like, oh, how can I be that? You know, because I know the sensation also lives in me. So I'm going to practice just being the space for this. And so often what happens is just by being the space for it, which is another way of saying being in acceptance, not trying to change it or anything, I just watch the other person, I do this in sessions too, start to get to the truth themselves. I just watch them put all the pieces together. I've seen it from the start. I just kind of sit there, smile, go, yeah, you got it. Great. Look at you go. I'm your biggest fan. Look at you go. And then there's other times where it's like, oh, I'm feeling a little stuck here. Can I have some insight? And then I'll give insight if I'm asked, you know? And sometimes I won't. I mean, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I'll say that those are the most common ways that, man, there's a contraction. I go right into, man, I know what I'm in. And this is compassion speaking. I know when I'm in a contraction, I'm very confused. I'm feeling disconnected, not understood, probably not heard, and afraid. What's the most loving thing I would give me in that situation? And sometimes it just sounds like, oh, I'm here with you and I'm not going anywhere while you're in this. And I want to understand. And it's just that. And it's less about the words than it's about, where's that coming from? And it's coming from, this is all welcome. It doesn't need to change. It doesn't even need to go. You could be afraid forever. You could feel like I'm at fault forever. If I'm not believing it, then I'm just going to be here and it will dissolve because I'm in power and they're in force. And love, you have to double down in force to keep it alive. In power, you don't have to do much. You just remain in power, which is in love. And that force will start to create all the healing and insight you need.
That was very powerful. It really speaks to the strength that comes from first doing the work for yourself and sitting in inquiry and learning that self-love and that safety. Because through healing, we learn empathy.
Yeah.
By experiencing ourselves and understanding what we may need when we are experiencing shadows, we can then give that to others. It's like doing the training. And yeah. Once you have that training on yourself, you're then able to extend that empathy to your partner or your friend or your colleague. And there's a really different experience that happens in our partnership when I'm in that power and hold that space and that love, and I'm not identifying with my stories, and I can see truth for what it is. And that doesn't mean seeing the truth about your partner and what you think that they're experiencing, but rather the truth for yourself and holding that space. Likewise, when you do that for me, it immediately creates this container that allows them to unfold and be in their expression and experience their emotions, which can be extremely intense. The minute we try to save or control or think we know better about our partner and say, oh, I want to help you, and so I'm going to lead you through inquiry, we rob them of the capability of learning that experience for themselves. And we also communicate to them that what you're feeling currently isn't okay, when in reality, it is okay because it's what they're feeling. It's what's being expressed and needs to move. And so when I find myself identifying with the stories of like, ooh, I need to dissolve this conflict in order for us to return to love. I need to run you through inquiry, or I need to tell you what I'm seeing and perceiving in your experience and what the lesson might be for you, which is impossible for us to know for our partners. That's their experience. That is their lesson to learn. All we can know is the projections of our experiences and our lessons onto them. And so the minute we say, okay, I'm going to let them be in their experience. I'm going to hold the space. I'm not going to identify. And if they need or want support, like you said, offer my experience, but also knowing that what I offer may not be true for them. Mm-hmm. It's only true for me. And so when we offer insight, allowing it to be wrong, if it's wrong, and not identifying with that story is also really important.
I love what you said earlier about, and I definitely poorly communicated it, about the whole gender thing and different ways to say things. And so I'd love to say to listeners, like, do what works for you in your partnership, right? Everybody's different. In our moments, specifically your moments, now that you say that, it is mostly on that side of when Eric is really deep in the story and in speaking outward, you don't love me, and projecting that outward, we've found that is a trigger phrase, and it's just mind-blowing every time. And I cannot, how many times in this episode can I say, like, the power of inquiry, right? Because just me saying, like, did I say that? Did I say I didn't love you? I don't even have to say it. Just, did I say that? Boom, I see mm-hmm. the light come on. I mm-hmm. watch my partner go from this, like, we call it Wile E. Coyote is what is kind of the nickname for him, of like, you don't love me and all these things and I'm a terrible partner. And it just, did I say that? Like, did I say you were a terrible partner? And immediately, almost every time, his response, it's like a pause, a jolt that, you know, comes back online a little bit. And he's like, no, you didn't say that. I'm going to go sit in inquiry for a minute, or I'm going to go meditate, or I'm going to, whoa, like, the pattern happened and I'm not conscious of it. But yeah, definitely do what works in your partnership. As always, take what resonates, leave what doesn't, and be mindful of how you say things when you say them, because like with anything, as we said, inquiry can also be used, you know, by the ego and can be used to create more conflict and more harm. And so, yeah, I think there's been a lot of really great wisdom shared here today. And, you know, as we've said, inquiry has changed our lives. It has completely transformed this person sitting next to me. I really don't know where we would be today without it and without you and the work that you do. And so before we say goodbye, I would love it if you could share how people can connect with you, your offerings, all of those fun things. If inquiry is resonating with them, how they can learn more and reach out to you.
Yeah. I'm mainly active on Instagram. I have a Telegram channel that's free that I put some kind of long form content, like I'll kind of rant for 5 or 10 minutes on different concepts. And we didn't talk about German New Medicine, but that's a whole other facet of my work, which the marriage of German New Medicine and inquiry has been incredible. I've had clients have fibroids completely dissolve off of their CAT scan, and clients go from level 8 pain to level 4 pain with their rheumatoid arthritis in one session. And the wisdom of GHK, German New Medicine, combined with somatic inquiry, is really root cause healing work. And most of us will have some signature symptoms on and off for most of our life, or a stage of our life. And those symptoms always point to a root cause unconscious conflict. So I talk a lot about that in my Telegram and on my Instagram. And just, yeah, link in my bio, my website. I'll also come this summer be launching round 2 of The Circle, which is exactly what I just shared, the marriage of GNM and inquiry. And yeah, I think that's it.
Are you open currently to taking on new clients for your coaching?
Yeah, I could make like one spot. I'm pretty full at the moment, but yeah, I could probably do one private client. Everyone gets a discounted one-on-one session from me to, like, if they want to invest in something deeper. So that's always going to be available. One-on-one, I go to Scotland. I don't know when this is going to be out, but the 11th of this month till the end of the month. But yeah, I can make a space for that.
Well, Brandon, thank you so much for being here with us today. You're such an integral part of this story and of our healing and our return to love. And listeners, definitely check out Brandon. His content on Instagram is wonderful. Lots of really free, great wisdom there. And definitely start trying to incorporate inquiry into your life. The next time a thought or an emotion or a pattern or a story comes up, take that pause for just one moment. Take your pause and start to ask yourself these questions. You know, is this true? Where is this coming from? Do I know that this is true? Who would I be if I didn't have this story right now? Like, what would my life look like? And finding ways to get back to love. This is just another one of those tools in the tool bucket. And, you know, as always, doing that with the intention of creating more love and bringing ourselves back to love. So thank you so much, Brandon, for who you are and all that you do and sharing your energy here with us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.